treat you.
WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. This morning, we're going to have a double billing. We're going to start things off with an old friend. An old familiar face.
The shadow knows.
Blue Coal presents The Shadow, the mystery man who strikes terror in the very hearts of shopsters, lawbreakers, and criminals. Today, the Death Triangle.
I let the sponsorship bleed over on that because it was brought to you by Blue Coal. The original air date for this one was the 12th of December, 1937, and as you can hear, it's called The Death Triangle. Not certain who the narrator is. A lot of the information is sketchy on these early Shadow first seasons in terms of all we really know. Occasionally there's a writing credit, and I'll let you know that, but it stars Orson Welles and Agnes Moorehead.
By order of the authority of Devil's Island, you, Pierre Martin, are hereby sentenced to 100 days in confinement solitaire and 100 lashes in the presence of the assembled prisoners as a warning to all who would attempt to escape. Let the punishment begin.
I will find the devil who betrayed me.
One.
I will learn his name.
Two.
I will kill.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt this program of organ music to bring you a special news flash from our affiliated press service. New York, December 12, 1937. The Shadow has been found. Dr. James Evans, world-famous child surgeon, told reporters this afternoon that a wounded man who claimed to be the Shadow forced his way into Dr. Evans' private clinic and at the point of a gun forced him to remove a bullet. The wounded man then revealed that he was none other than that mysterious character who has waged a one-man war against crime, the Shadow. Before Dr. Evans could report the case to the police, however, the Shadow mysteriously disappeared. The famous surgeon believes the Shadow has little chance of surviving his wound. Our organ recital now continues.
Dr. Evans speaking.
Mr. Evans, the man you claim to have operated upon was a fake. The real Shadow has not been wounded.
The Shadow? You are the Shadow?
Yes, Dr. Evans. You don't seem surprised.
I'm not. I've been hoping you'd get in touch with me. That statement I issued was false.
False? Come now, Dr. Evans. A man of your high standing in the medical world does not issue false statements without very grave reasons.
There was a very grave reason. I need your help. An old acquaintance of mine, Raymond Dubril, the financier, has received a death threat.
Have him notify the police.
No, he refuses to do that.
Then let him take the consequences. Unless... Dr. Evans, have you also received a death threat?
Yes, I have.
Before I made this call, I investigated your past, Dr. Evans.
My past is a matter of public knowledge.
You were once a political prisoner on Devil's Island. You escaped 20 years ago with three other men. Raymond Dubril, the banker, and Pierre Martin, the concert pianist.
Yes, but our convictions were reversed by a high court a year after we escaped.
I know it was proved that you three were innocent. But what about the fourth man who escaped with you? A murderer.
Jacques Covey. He was caught and sent back to Devil's Island.
After the escape, one of you betrayed him to the police.
I don't believe that.
Why else should he mark you for death?
Then you know Covey escaped from Devil's Island a second time 6 months ago?
Yes, Dr. Evans.
Then you're interested. You'll help?
Yes, I will help. But only because your life is in danger, Doctor. The world can ill afford to lose the skill and genius that has saved the lives of countless children.
You overestimate my importance, Shadow. But will you help?
Yes. When and where does Covey's warning say he will strike first?
At Dubril's Long Island estate tonight.
How do you know this warning came from Covey?
Dubril received a miniature music box in the shape of a coffin in the mail this morning.
A musical coffin?
Yes. And when the lid of the coffin is raised, the music box plays a tune. A tune Dubril, Martin, Covey, and myself whistled as a danger signal when we were planning our escape from Devil's Island.
Where is Dubril, Dr. Evans?
At his Long Island estate. Martin is staying with him, and I am driving out there to spend the night. I had hoped you'd come and help.
I will help you, Dr. Evans. Tell Dubril and Martin that the Shadow will be there tonight.
Miss Lane.
Is Mr. Cranston at home?
No, Miss Lane, he's not.
You know where I can reach him?
Well, he may be at his club.
No, I've tried there.
His office?
Yes, everywhere. Nobody's seen him all day.
Is there anything I can do?
Be sure and stay here in case he comes home. I'll call you on the phone later.
Yes, miss.
I've got to find him. I've got to. I've just got to. I've got to find Lamont. Maybe Dr. Evans knows more than he told the newspapers. His office said he might be at home. Number 33. Yes, this is it. Oh, Lamont, I knew they'd shoot you someday.
Yes, miss?
Is Dr. Evans here? I must see him.
I beg your pardon, miss, but are you another reporter?
Yes, and I must see Dr. Evans. It's important. It's a matter of life or death.
I'm sorry, miss, but Dr. Evans has nothing to say to the press. He's not at home.
But I must see him. I must find him.
I'm sorry.
That car. That's Dr. Evans' car.
Yes, miss.
Where's he going?
I'm not at liberty to say, miss.
Never mind. I'll find out myself. Taxi? Taxi?
Okay, miss. Where to?
Follow that big black limousine, the one with the green cross on the license plate.
Well, it's a doctor's car, miss. I may have to break a lot of traffic laws if it goes through red lights.
Never mind, I'll pay the fines. Don't lose sight of that car for a minute.
Okay, lady, but this is going to be one fast ride.
Driver! Yeah? Driver, slow down. That car's turning in at that estate.
What do you want me to do? Go through the gates after?
No, no. Stop here.
Okay.
Here's $5.
Hey, thanks, man.
I wonder if this is just a wild goose chase. Lamont couldn't be way out here, not if he's wounded, dying. That car. It sounded like... Oh, but it couldn't be. It is. It's Lamont. Lamont!
Margot, what in heaven's name are you doing here?
Oh, Lamont, then it wasn't true. You weren't shot. Dr. Evans didn't operate on you.
Oh, no, so you heard that news flash, too.
The papers are full of it. I tried to find you at the office, at home, at your club, everywhere.
I'm sorry, Margot. I should have known you'd worry, but I've had a very busy afternoon. How did you get here?
I followed Dr. Evans' car. He just drove through those gates. What's happening, Lamont? Are you trying to find out why he said he operated on the shadow? Is someone impersonating you?
No, Dr. Evans did that, knowing I'd get in touch with him. He needs my help in a very special manner.
But why? Is someone after him, threatening him?
Yes, also the owner of this estate, the banker Dubreuil and Martin, the concert pianist.
And you're going to help them?
I'm interested in helping Evans. He's a great doctor and a great humanitarian. His life is in danger.
Lamont, now that I'm here, is there anything I can do?
Yes, Margot, wait in my car. Keep your eye on the house. If you see a light go on and off twice in one of the windows, drive to the nearest payphone and notify the state police to come to the Dubreuil estate.
I'll watch for the signal.
Fine.
I suppose there's no use my asking you to be careful.
No, Margot, but I'll try. I'll try to avoid really putting Dr. Evans to the trouble of removing a bullet from the shadow.
Dubreuil, stop pounding on the table and cursing Covey.
Oh, that's all very well for you to say, Evans. Your turn hasn't come, but it will. If we three sitting here, you or me or Martin, don't get Covey when he comes here tonight, you will be the next on his list. You or Martin.
Don't concern yourself about my fate, Dubreuil. I am not afraid of Covey.
Oh, you'll change your mind if he manages to kill me, Martin.
I wonder what it's like to die. What do you think, Dubreuil? Or do you ever think of anything but your fat stomach and your money?
Gentlemen, this is no time to argue. I have something more important to tell you.
What is it, Evans? I hear you had quite an experience today. Operated on this man who calls himself the Shadow.
Yes, that's what I want to talk to you about.
Ah, there's a man, Dubreuil, the Shadow. He might save you from Covey.
What could he do? I've had the best private detectives in the country trying to find some trace of Covey ever since he escaped from Devil's Island again 6 months ago.
By the way, Dubreuil, I've always wondered who tipped off the police when Covey was hiding after he helped us escape 20 years ago.
Covey was a murderer. We were innocent men.
And also, who betrayed me, Dubreuil, the time I tried to escape alone the first time?
Martin, Dubreuil, now listen to me. A moment ago, we were talking about the Shadow. Well, he isn't dying. I didn't operate on him. I announced that, hoping the real Shadow would get in touch with me.
And did he?
Yes. And he's coming here tonight to help us.
I've always been curious to see this Shadow.
You won't see him. No man has ever seen him, but he'll be here.
Oh, Evans, for a man of intelligence, you're talking like a fool. The age of ghosts and mystic presences is...
You're wrong, Dubreuil, you're wrong. Because I am a doctor, I can readily accept the fact that the Shadow is a master of the powers of mental suggestion, of mass hypnosis. Recent experiments have proven conclusively that...
Rubbish.
Allow me to convince him, Dr. Evans.
What was that? Who spoke then?
The Shadow, Dubreuil. You do not accept the theory of my power of invisibility, but perhaps you will accept the fact, for I am here.
Sit down, Dubreuil. You look rather pale.
If I am to help you, you will all sit down. Sit at that table there. I understand there is little time to lose. I must know the whole story, the truth, if I am to help you.
Do as the Shadow says. Sit there, Martin. And you, there, Dubreuil.
Well, why don't you talk back, Dubreuil?
Be quiet, Martin. Dr. Evans, I will help you if I can. But there is one gap in the chain of events leading up to this moment.
I'll tell you anything I know, Shadow.
Then tell me this. When and under what circumstance did Covey first threaten your lives?
It was the last day we spent in the open boat in which we escaped from Devil's Island 20 years ago. Storms had blown us off our course. Our food was gone. Our water was exhausted. Covey, the only one who knew how to navigate, was... Well, he was slowly dying from hunger and thirst. He'll remember his cry.
Water! Water!
Oh, be quiet, Covey. There is no water. The cask is empty.
You're lying, Dubreuil. All of you. You've been drinking my share. Give me that bucket.
Give me a drink of that mud.
Don't let him have it. Salt water will kill him.
What does it matter, Dr. Evans? 17 days in this open boat. Nights of storm and days of blazing heat.
Water. Water. I'm dying, I tell you. Dying. You're not giving me my share. You're stealing my water. Where will you be if I die? I'm the only one that knows navigation.
Be patient, Copey. It may rain tonight.
We might as well be back on Devil's Island. At least there was bread and water there.
Bread? Bread? A crust. Just a crust of bread and water. Water.
There's no bread, Copey. The last crust went 3 days ago.
You're cheating me. Killing me. You only brought me along to steer the boat. Now you're starving me to death. You don't want me to live. But I will live. I'll get you for this. I'll live to kill every one of you for this. You, Dubril. You, Martin. And you, Evans.
Oh, shut him up, Evans. You're a doctor. You know what to do.
Look. Martin, Dubril, look. Seagulls.
Oh, what does it matter? We have no guns.
I know, but don't you see? The gulls never go far from land or a ship.
Oh, you're right, Evans.
Look, look to the west. It's land. Land at last. All right. There, to the southwest. You can see the sun of the mountains. We're saved, free at last. Come here, come here. Sit up, sit up. Look, look. We've sighted land. There'll be food and water plenty for everybody.
You tried to kill me, starve me to death. But I'm going to live. I'm going to live until the last one of you is dead. Dead.
All three of us. And so you see, that's how it all began.
And now Covey is free and out to get us, Shadow.
But what makes you so sure it is Covey?
Well, it couldn't be anyone else. It's Covey, all right. He sent you Breel, that thing on the table.
That oblong box?
Yes, Shadow. Notice its shape. It's a miniature coffin, beautifully carved.
Covey was a woodcarver. He was always handy with a knife.
But still, it does not follow that he was the one.
Except for one thing, Shadow. When the lid of the coffin is raised, it's the music box. And that tune it's playing was the warning signal we used while planning our escape from Devil's Island.
Remember, only the four of us knew it. Dubril, Covey, Evans, and myself.
Oh, stop it, Evans. Stop that cursed thing. Stop it, I tell you. I can't stand it.
So you have a conscience, eh, Dubril? That danger refrain recalls the past, doesn't it?
Stop talking about it.
It looks as though Covey meant business, doesn't he?
Don't sit there conniving over me. You forget your turn, maybe next, maybe tonight even.
I am not forgetting anything, Dubril.
You better steady yourself, Dubril. I'll get you a drink.
Oh, never mind. Here's the decanter. I'll pour it myself. Oh, that tune! Where is it coming from? I smashed the coffin.
Good heavens, Dubril! It's the decanter in your hands.
Oh, someone changed the decanter. Covey! He did it! He's here! He's been in his house tonight!
Dubril, where are you going?
To my room! I don't trust anybody! I'd be safe there behind locked doors, alone! And if Covey comes, I'll be ready for
him! Wait, Dubril, wait!
Let him go, Dr. Evans.
But he shouldn't be left alone! Covey may carry out his threat!
Are you sure it is, Covey?
What do you mean? It must be. It couldn't be anyone else. The coffin, the decanters, are his warning.
I know. But you said the four of you knew the signal. Are you sure it isn't one of you?
Of course not. I thought you said the Shadow was here to help
him. I am. But I am content to let events lead themselves to a logical conclusion.
You mean you won't use your power to save us from him?
I shall use my power at the moment it is required, Dr. Evans. Right now, for instance. Look on the table.
Huh?
There is a note where the decanter was standing.
Good heavens! Covey has been here. Listen to this, Martin. You are the first. And you will die tonight, Raymond Dubril.
Now we return to the regular scheduled organ music.
just kind of... I threw that organ music in there because the organ music was interrupted to bring news of the Shadow being operated on. That's the conclusion of Act 1 of the Death Triangle. That's all I'm going to play today. I'll continue that episode on the next episode, on the next edition of the Grand Hour. Again, the original air date for that was the 12th of December, 1937, starring Agnes Moorehead as Margot Lane and Orson Welles as Lamont Cranston in The Shadow. You're listening to Arthur. This is the Grand Hour, 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford, WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio. I guess we're going to start off with another one from the 3rd of January, 1954. 17 years later, it's becoming a fan club favorite, it seems. By the way, thanks to the fans who are sending in their requests. It's always nice to get something in the mail, as some of the requests are a little bit more easy to negotiate than others. But we're going to start you off here with a six shooter.
B.C. James Stewart as the six shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl. Its handle unmarked. People call them both the six-shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the six-shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
Yard Canyon, that's what folks called it. Probably there was another name, more official, written down on a map in the territorial capital. But the people around Smoke Falls, they just called it 50 Yard Canyon. You see, it was only 50 yards wide, someplace even narrower. But it was close to 35 miles long. And riding through it was sort of like riding between two giant slabs of granite, all polished and smooth the way a gravestone's fixed up. Except that these slabs were close to half a mile high. Well, anyway, that's what we were coming into, Scar and me, following the trail east to Smoke Falls. We were just getting on toward daybreak, and the sky was kind of a oatmeal gray, heavy, and wet, and waiting for the sun to come up to stir some life into it. We rounded a sharp bend, and Scar flared his nostrils and slowed down to a walk. And, what's the matter, boy? Come on. Come on, come on, come on. The canyon got a little wider up ahead, and the sides angled up somewhat gentler than usual. I saw some clumps of trees and some mesquite, but it was still too dark to see anything real plain. I got off Scar as fast as I could dive out of the saddle. Now, what the Sam Hill is...
Now, who in the thunder are you shooting at?
I ain't particular, mister.
Well, I am.
I couldn't make him out. He was just a shadow partway up the canyon wall, maybe 30, 40 feet. His gunfire gave me a pretty good notion of where to aim. For a couple of minutes, everything was real quiet. Oh, I didn't stand to reason that I'd hit him with that shot. I hadn't. I inched my way across the floor of the canyon. Start up the side. A bullet nicked the rock right about a foot left of my face. He knew where I was, all right. But then I had a pretty good notion of his whereabouts, too. Well, a man's entitled to a lucky hit every once in a while. If he wasn't faking that yell. It seemed like there was only one way to find out.
All right, drop it. Come on, drop it.
Okay. The pistol slid out of his hand. His shirt sleeve was stained pink at the elbow. He twisted around, gave me a squint. Just then the sun swung up over the top of the canyon, spilled over the sides. Why, Art. Hey, Art Hamper.
Who'd you think you were? Holy mackerel, Britt. Well, I'd be doggone. You're just about the last person in the world I'd expect to bump into out here.
Yeah, well, you sure were expecting to bump into something.
Yeah.
What's the trouble, Art? Who are you gunning for?
Somebody's gunning for me.
Huh?
Clyde's dead, Britt.
Clyde? What?
He was shot yesterday morning. Shot in the back.
Well, you know who did it?
I know who the sheriff says did it. Me.
What, he thinks you killed your own brother?
Stepbrother. Clyde and me weren't real kin. But we was as close as if we did have the same blood.
Yeah, well, speaking of blood, Art, that elbow of yours...
A bullet only grazed me. I'll tie my bandana around it.
No, you better let me give you a hand. Here, I'll tell you. Where'd the sheriff get the idea you had something to do with Clyde being shot?
Well, it's kind of a roundabout story. You see, Pa died a couple of months ago.
Oh, I didn't know that. I'm sorry to hear that.
I sure.
There. Yeah, well, that ought to take care of your arm for the time being.
Thanks. Well, in his will, Pa left things equal, half to me and half to Clyde.
Uh-huh.
Folks got the idea that him being my father and not Clyde's, well, they thought I was kind of put out by Clyde's getting the same as me.
But you weren't.
Oh, of course not, Britt. I didn't have no complaint. Clyde was as close to Pa as I ever was. He was entitled to just as much.
Uh-huh. Well, how did Clyde happen to get shot, Art?
That's what I don't know. I just don't. I'd give anything in the world if I did.
Well, you said yesterday... That...
Well, in the morning, about 7 o'clock, I was in the barn hitching up the buckboard. I heard somebody at the pump outside. I figured it was Clyde drawing a bucket of water. And then I heard the gun go off. I started for the door, but before I could get there, Clyde stumbled into the barn. Was holding on to his belly, and he fell forward into my arms. That's where he died, Brid, in my arms.
He didn't say anything?
Oh, he tried to talk, but the words just wouldn't come out. He tried to tell me who shot him, but just couldn't. I'll find out, though, Brid. Someday I'll find out, and I'll get even.
I'll take it easy, Art.
Instead of blaming me, why ain't Sheriff Vail looking for the guilty man? Why ain't he going after the real killer?
Well, you're sure the sheriff does blame you?
Well, he arrested me yesterday afternoon.
Oh, I see.
Tried to take me into town, but I gave him the slip. Rode up into the canyon here.
Oh, well, now, you shouldn't have done that, Art. If you're innocent, you'll get a chance to prove it. Running away, it just makes you look guilty.
I gotta prove anything dangling from the branch of a tree.
What are you talking about?
He was gonna lynch me. George Crump and Sam Bitley and the other fellas were the sheriff, and he wasn't going to do nothing to stop him. He said hanging was better than I deserved. You don't know Sheriff Elbridge.
No, he must be new to smoke for.
Well, he don't believe in wasting time with trials and juries. I wouldn't be the first man Bales let the boys take care of.
I see.
That's why I had to get away. Oh, I knew I couldn't run too far before they'd catch up with me out here in this canyon.
Well, you are kind of boxed in.
Yeah, but I figured a day or so when the fellas had cooled down, listen to reason. Maybe they'd even pick up the real killer's trail by then.
Uh-huh.
I thought you was one of Vail's posse when I heard your horse. That's the reason I fired. I wasn't aiming to kill anybody, understand, Britt? I was just hoping to scare you off.
Uh-huh. Well, even so, it seems like to me you stand a good chance of making things worse for yourself the way you've been acting. Oh, I'm not saying that a man has to sit tight and let himself get lynched, but it just...
What do you think I ought to do, Britt?
I'm riding into Smoke Falls. We could ride along together.
If you give yourself up, that ought to be something in your favor.
Well, yeah, I guess you're right. My horse is starting to go lame. I couldn't go much further anyhow, but tell you the truth, Britt, I'm scared.
You're scared?
Well, they had a rope. George Crump was carrying it when the sheriff arrested me. And the way the fellas looked, their eyes half closed and their faces red, sort of like they had a fever. I never been a coward, Britt, but I was scared.
Well, like you said, they'd probably cool off by now.
Well, if there was some way I could just be sure. Britt, maybe if you was to talk to them first.
Talk to them?
Well, before I give myself up, they must be following me. You're bound to run into them on your way into town.
Well, I suppose so.
Oh, they'd listen to you. They respect you, and they'd have to listen. Even Sheriff Vale must have heard about the six shooter. You could tell him that I never had nothing against Clyde. You knew he was always friendly, even when we was kids.
Sure, sure.
If you'd make the sheriff understand and the boys with him, well, then I'd feel better about going back into town. Britt, you ride on ahead. They can't be more than an hour or so away. Tell them I'll give myself up. Tell them to wait for me at Squirrel Rock. You know where that is, don't you?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, tell them... I'll meet him there at noon.
I don't know, Art. This,
you don't think I'd run out on you, Britt? You don't think I'd do a thing like that?
No, but I...
Well, all right, then. Squirrel Rock at noon. That'll give my pony time to rest up. Afterwards, after I'm all straightened out with the sheriff, we'll find out who killed Clyde. You'll help me find out, won't you?
I'll help if I can, Art.
Thanks, Britt.
Just one thing, though.
Yeah.
Now, suppose I don't meet up with the posse.
Well, you couldn't very well miss them here in the canyon.
No, maybe they've turned around. Maybe they've gone back.
Well, in any case, I'll be at Squirrel Rock at noon. If the posse ain't there, you wait for me just the same. I'll go into Smoke Falls with you.
All right, Art. All right. I guess you know what you're doing. All right. I'll be seeing you. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning when I passed Squirrel Rock. Not much later when I met up with the posse. Wasn't much of a posse, though, just three men. Fell on the lead, gave his pinto the spur, and trot up ahead of the other two. He's a good-sized man, big bone, solid, with a tangle of red hair and splotches of freckles across his face. And the way he wore his revolvers and rested his hand against the butt of one of them, tell who he was, too. Even if you didn't happen to notice the star on his breast.
Howdy.
Morning.
I'm Sheriff Vale from Smoke Falls.
Yeah, I've been expecting to run into you, Sheriff.
Oh?
My name's Ponsett.
Britt Ponsett?
It sure is. Well, how are you, Britt? What are you doing around here?
Oh, I'm just passing through, George.
Hey, Sheriff, ain't you never met up with the six shooter?
No, can't say as I have. Heard about him, though.
And this here is Sam Bitley, Britt.
Oh, yeah.
Howdy. You said something about expecting a sponsor.
Yeah. Art Hemper thought you'd be heading up this canyon.
Hemper?
What were you... You mean you ran into Art, Britt?
Early this morning.
Oh, doggone it. That's who we're looking for.
Yeah, he told me.
Well, did he tell you why?
Sure. Yeah, his brother was killed yesterday. You want him for murder.
And you knew all that? You just let him go scot-free?
Oh, what'd you expect me to do?
You could have brought him in, saved us the trouble.
Yeah.
I'm not a part of your posse, Sheriff. Besides, aren't willing to give himself up.
Give himself
what?
Up?
He says he didn't have anything to do with Clyde's death. The only reason he ran off is because you were talking about lynching him.
Say, Britt, how you gone loco?
You didn't actually believe him, Ponson.
I've known Art for a good many years, Sheriff.
Well, looks like we know him a little better than you do.
Yeah, I saw it, Britt, the whole thing with my own eyes. I saw the murder.
Now, hold on, George. Now, you didn't see
it. I tell you, I saw it. I was riding past the Hemper Ranch, and Clyde and Art were out behind the barn. They didn't notice me. They were too busy arguing and shouting. Then Clyde turned and started to walk towards the house. Well, Art pulled out his gun and shot him in the back. Clyde didn't even have a chance to draw.
Well,
What, is that the truth, George?
As true as anything in this world. Well, I swung around, and I headed into town to get the sheriff. And that's when Art spotted me. He got off a couple of shots, but I was out of range.
Well, the story he told me is entirely different.
Well, that shouldn't surprise you too much, Ponson.
No, I guess not. What happened when you arrested him, Sheriff?
Well, we didn't arrest him.
No, we didn't.
Why do you think we're out here looking for him?
I see.
Well, he took off before I could bring the sheriff back. We picked up his trail and followed it into the canyon here.
And as for anybody trying to lynch him, well, there'll be no lynch law in Smoke Falls while I'm sheriff.
Well, that's good, Sheriff.
Yes, sir. And besides, ain't no need in his case. Any juror in the territory will convict him on the evidence.
Why, of course.
Yeah, well, it sure sounds that way, doesn't it? Well, I just don't know what to say, Sheriff.
Well, you aren't to blame for believing Art. You were a friend of his. Before it changed. You went around to see how mean he's got the last few months. Always picking on Clyde and making life miserable for him. As if it was Clyde's fault the old man left him everything.
Everything?
Well, sure. Ranch, cattle, the whole shebang.
The whole shebang.
Yes, sir. I guess Jake Hemper knew Art wasn't any good underneath. Guess that's why he picked Clyde to inherit. Even though he wasn't a blood relative.
Well, you gotta admit, there's one thing Art's good at.
Huh?
Lying. The way he fooled Britt Ponson, he must be a pretty convincing liar. Well, you'll have to give him that much. Won't you, Britt?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give him that much.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0. All guns are always loaded. Rule 1. Never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2. Keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3. Be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Safety. WMFO Medford.
Okay, we're going to continue here with Act 2 of The Six Shooter directly. Following this Act 2, I'm going to play a couple of gospel songs to celebrate the Good Friday and Easter that's approaching this weekend. And hopefully, I believe there's going to be Radio Morning is the show that's going to come in after us, after the grand hour. Thanks for listening.
But just tell Sheriff Vail the whole cock and bull story just the way Art had given it to me. I felt like crawling in a prairie dog hole. Oh, not just because Art had made a fool of me. It's more than that. We'd been pretty good friends once, all three of us. Art, Clyde, and me. Now, Clyde was dead, and sooner or later, Art would be brought in for killing him. If I wasn't so doggone gullible, it might have been a lot sooner.
Well, Rock, eh? It's only 3 or 4 miles. You must come by it.
Yeah, that's where he said he'd give himself up.
Oh, is that so?
Well, if he told you to wait for him there, you can be darn sure it's the last place he'll be. He's probably still up at the end of the canyon, trying to find the pass you come through.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, sure.
Well, we better ride on ahead. You want to come with us, Ponson?
No, I think I'll head back for town.
Well, suit yourself. I left a couple of the boys along the way in case Hemper gives us a slip and starts backtracking. You might tell him to keep the eyes open. We haven't caught him yet.
Yeah. All right, Sheriff.
Okay, George. Sam, come on, let's go.
Come on, boy.
Well, that's what I intended to do. Just head straight for Smoke Falls, but somehow I found myself turning around. I took it real easy, and then when I came to Squirrel Rock, I couldn't help pulling up. Whoa, boy. Whoa. Whoa, Scott. Whoa. It was just about noon. The sun was square in the middle of the sky. There sure wasn't any sign of Art Hemper either. Not that I really thought he'd be there, not after what I'd found out from the sheriff. I'd never looked at that rock real close before. It was a lot bigger than most of the other boulders along the way, but that was about the only difference. I couldn't figure why folks got the name. It sure didn't look much like a squirrel to me. It was big, though. Wasn't any doubt about that. If it had been a couple of feet wider, it had blocked the whole canyon. And I remember thinking to myself, a man could hide almost anywhere around there real easy. The only trouble was I didn't think of it soon enough.
Right on time, Britt.
Yeah. Yeah, so are you, Art.
You don't mind getting off your horse, do you?
Well, as a matter of fact, I just assume not.
Well, you better do it anyway. Keep those arms stretched way up high.
Uh-huh. All right.
Now you can unbuckle your gun belt, but use only one hand, your left one.
Yeah. Okay.
Thanks.
I guess you know I ran into Sheriff Vail.
Sure. I told you you would. Him and his boys come riding through here just a few minutes ago.
Mm-hmm. Didn't even stop, huh?
I must have figured I was up at the end of the canyon hunting the pass you come through.
Yeah. Art, George Crump says he saw you shoot Clyde.
Did, huh? Well, I didn't pick a very good time for it, did I?
You're not going to deny it again, huh?
You wouldn't believe me if I did. I already pressed my luck with you once today, Britt. I won't try it twice.
Why'd you kill him, Art? It wasn't Clyde's fault your father left him the property.
The ranch wasn't the real reason. I guess folks never will believe me, but that wasn't the cause.
Well, what was the cause, then?
I can't even put it in words. I reckon I hated Clyde. I reckon I always hated him, but I didn't know how much until... until they read the will, until I found out how Pa really felt towards me. You see, I never had no mother. She died when I was born.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't very long after that Pa married again and I had me a ready-made family. Oh, she wasn't like one of them stepmothers you read about in stories. She always tried to be fair and honest. Maybe that was it. Maybe she tried to be too fair.
Yeah, too fair.
Well, whenever I did something bad... never said a word to me. She waited till Pa come home and told him about it. I was his son, she said, and she didn't have no right to punish me. It was up to Pa to take down the razor strop and give me a whaling. Not that she was easy on Clyde. She wasn't. She saw to it that he told the line. But he belonged to her. He was her responsibility. He got plenty of whippings, too, but it was her that give it to him. I guess it don't sound very sensible, Britt, but... those times when I used to wish she'd care enough about me to, well, just slap me or give my ears a good boxing. But she never did. I was Pa's son.
You couldn't blame Clyde for the way his mother acted toward you.
Oh, I didn't blame him. I didn't blame him. Not at first. I told myself we were even, Stephen. He had a Ma and I had a Pa. That was fair enough. And whatever happened, I was Art Hemper. Britt, he wasn't even entitled to the same name, not by any rights. Once I asked Pa about that, I asked him why Clyde was calling himself Hemper. Real good tannin. That's the answer I got.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it was. All the time I was growing up, all the time until she died. I was kind of happy when it happened. I thought maybe now it'd be me and Pa again. I thought her being out of the way would sort of push Clyde to one side. Yeah. Things didn't work out like I figured. Clyde and Pa, they mourned together. They seemed to be closer than before. So I told myself all I had to do was wait. I was Pa's son. Everybody knows when a man dies, it's his son that inherits. All I had to do was to wait. And then he did die. And I found out I'd been living my whole life on lies. I'd convinced myself that when the chips were down, Clyde wouldn't matter anymore. Pa'd realize I was his son, his only son. And the day they read his will, I knew that I hadn't had a Ma and I hadn't had a Pa either. Clyde had had them both all the time. So I had to kill him. Maybe if he was dead, things would be different.
Art.
Stay where you are, Ponson.
Now listen, Art. Now listen to me. I think I understand what you're trying to tell me. Some of it, anyhow. And maybe you weren't exactly responsible for what you did to Clyde, but... You've got to give yourself up.
Give myself up? For the first time in my life, I've got a reason for living. There's nobody standing in my way, nothing more.
There's a posse standing in your way.
They're past us now. They've gone up the canyon. I can ride out the Smoke Falls Gap without them even knowing.
Now, Sheriff Vail's no fool, Art. He figured you might slip by him. That's why he left some men behind.
Well, they won't stop us, Britt.
Us?
Sure. You're taking me in town. I'm your prisoner. Of course, this gun of yours won't be loaded, but nobody's going to know that. And nobody's going to know I'm holding my own gun just inside my shirt. That nick you give me on the elbow, it's going to come in real handy. All right, Britt. Here's a six shooter. Not that it'll be much use to you now.
Art brought his pony up from behind the rock, and we started down the trail. In a way, I felt kind of sorry for him. But that didn't justify what he'd done. That didn't justify him getting loose and killing somebody else, maybe. We were getting close to the mouth of the canyon now, and the trail kind of straightened out. I figured we ought to meet up with one of the sheriff's boys somewhere along about here. Be their last chance of stopping Art before we hit the flat country. Guess Art was figuring the same thing.
Hold your gun on me, Britt, like you were serious.
All right.
Don't try anything fancy.
We rode out for about 5 minutes more, and then I spotted him. Fellow leaning against the side of the canyon with a carbine across his arm. He must have been dozing, but when he heard us, he came awake fast, and the carbine had swung around ready for business.
All right, hold up there. So you got him, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I got him.
Who are you, mister? I didn't see you with the posse.
My name's Ponson, Britt Ponson.
Oh, sure, the six-shooter. Did he give you any trouble, Mr. Ponson?
No, not so far.
Well, where's the sheriff?
He's back a ways. He'll be coming along.
Well, maybe you ought to wait up here. We can all ride into town together.
Now, the sheriff said Ponson was to go on ahead.
Oh? That's so, Mr. Ponson?
Yeah, that's what he said.
Well, I guess you can take care of him. You ain't gonna need no help. Not with that gun of yours. I hear it's about the fastest shooting six gun ever been turned out.
Maybe you'd like to take a look at it.
Wait a minute.
Here, catch.
Are you crazy, Mr. Ponson, throwing your gun around like that? Why, if I wasn't covering Art there...
But you are covering him.
Huh?
Britt, I told you.
Look out,
I was already diving for the ground. Art fired through his shirt. And the bullet slid across the back of Scar's neck. Art didn't get a second chance. The carbine slugs tore into his chest and knocked him off his horse. He just lay there. He was bleeding bad.
Britt...
Yeah?
There's something I got to tell you.
All right, go ahead.
Sorry I lied to you this morning. A man shouldn't lie. That's what my pa always said. And you were my best friend. Shouldn't have lied to you especially.
Well?
Besides, it didn't do me no good. It just goes to show you that lying don't pay. Pa used to whip me whenever I lied. I should have known better, Britt. I should have known that. Well, if that don't take the cake...
What?
Not more than a minute ago, he tried to shoot you down. But now all he said was he was sorry he lied to you. What happens to a man like that, Mr. Ponson?
I don't know. I just don't know.
The Six Shooter is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burt, and it's written by him. Mr. Stewart may soon be seen in the Universal International picture, The Glenn Miller Story. Others in the cast were Shepard Menken, Bill Johnstone, Frank Gerstle, and Howard McNear. Special music for this program was by Basil Adlam, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. This is Hal Gibney speaking. This is the end.
Friend in Need. Original air date was the 3rd of January, 1954. As I said in the last little talk break, I'm going to play out some gospel songs. Somebody said if I wanted to find something about Easter, go through the hymns, because I have a collection of hymnals. But those don't always get recorded. First off, it's going to be J.D. Sumner and the Stamps, with Just a Closer Walk with Thee. J.D. Sumner is noted for his bass. I believe he was a Guinness Book of World Record holder for having the lowest register recorded. Again, we're hearing All Along the Picket Fence by the Marysville High School Band in the background.
Dear Lord, none but Thee. thee. Oh yeah, let it be. Dear Lord, let it be.
And he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known.
I come to the garden alone, while the dew is still on the roses, and the voice I hear falling on my ear, the Son of God discloses.
And he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own, and the joy we share as we tarry there, none other has ever known.
He speaks, and the sound of his voice is so sweet, the birds hush their singing, and the melody that he gave to me within my heart is ringing.
And he walks with me, and he talks with me, and he tells me I am his own, and the joy we share as we tarry there.